Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Movies and a Meal, the podcast where we talk about movies and other things while we eat. Keith here, and as always, I'm joined by Ben.
Greetings and salutations. I'm still trying it out.
That's awesome. And Brad.
What's up?
That's my away intro. I don't do the intro.
It took me a little while to find my groove. Yeah. Find it.
It's still on a probationary.
I'll allow it. It was pretty good. Well, this week we have a fun trio of movies, starting off with the found footage horror movie Late Night with the Devil. And then a look at the Roadhouse remake starring Jake Gyllenhaal. Surely a look back at the 1989 original too. And finally, the big movie for this week is Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, for which we'll also have the opinion of big Ghostbusters fan and friend of the podcast, Earl Holland. So, to start, Brad, what is Late Night with the Devil all about?
All right, summary as always, courtesy of IMDb. A live television broadcast in 1977 goes horribly wrong, unleashing evil into the nation's living room.
Now, I was looking for something to watch on a Saturday afternoon before diving into the basketball buffet, and I had never heard of this movie, but the title alone was enough, so I went to see it, and I'm glad I did. But before I dive into just what Late Night with the Devil is all about and what makes it work so well, a word first about the found footage subgenre of horror movies, which has never been my favorite. For me, it all goes back to the Blair Witch Project, which I still cannot stand. The one good example is Cloverfield. As you find out immediately, this flick from rising horror directors Cameron and Colin Cairns falls solidly in this category, and it's one of the best examples of it. So what is Late Night with the Devil all about? In a deceptively simple premise, it is, as Brad's description said, about a live broadcast in 1977 that goes way wrong very quickly. More importantly, it's about the show's host, played by the always great David Dastmalchian, known to fans mainly for The Suicide Squad. And here, thankfully, finally getting his own starring role. He dives right into the role of oily talk show host Jack Delroy, giving the role all the layers it needs to carry this little wonder. The trope of obsession with fame in the talk show world has certainly been tackled before, best in Martin Scorsese's The King of Comedy, and more recently in The Joker, and it's done to great effect here. The beauty in what the Cairns have cooked up here is that it unfolds slowly, sucking us into the supposed found tape of the live broadcast that's been found before, of course, but it all goes spectacularly wrong by the finish. And even though you can tell from the title what kind of deal Jack has made to achieve this small bit of fame, there's still plenty to enjoy here in watching it all unfold, helped along by a great supporting cast. Reese Autere is great as the sidekick who knows about the deal Jack has made and lives in dread of seeing it finally come together. Even better are Ian Bliss as the skeptic, and best of all, rising star Lily Dabo as the young girl who may or not be possessed by the titular devil. It's been a slow start for horror so far in 2024, but Late Night with the Devil is the perfect movie to give it a big boost. The Cairns brothers are definitely directors to watch, joining the Philippou brothers with last year's stunning Talk to Me to lead the bold new wave of Australian horror directors. As for Late Night with the Devil, for something not quite unique but still thoroughly entertaining, track down the year's first great horror movie in theaters this week while you can, and I'll give it 3.5 stars.
Okay. Keith, Rotten Tomatoes, critics and audience?
I know the critics, everybody will like this. Critics are probably a little harder. I'll go 75. Fans, you know, it's... If they know that it's a horror and it's David Dastmalchian, I'll go 85.
Well, you're spot on with the audience. 85%, 100-plus reviews. Mm-hmm. Critics, 96%, 112 reviews.
Excellent. So, I should have gone higher. I know it's gotten good reviews.
And critics and census, courtesy of Rotten Tomatoes. Delightfully dark, Late Night with the Devil proves possession horror isn't played out and serves as an outstanding showcase for David Dastmalchian.
It does, and you know, along with found footage horror not being my favorite, I really don't like possession horror. I'm tired of it. That's impressive. This traffics in both, but makes something thoroughly entertaining. All right, well, moving right along, our next movie is the 2024 remake of Roadhouse with Jake Gyllenhaal. And people know, of course, but Brad, what is this movie all about?
All right, summary as always, courtesy of IMDb. Ex-UFC fighter Dalton takes a job as a bouncer at a Florida Keys roadhouse, only to discover that this paradise is not all as it seems.
Of course. Well, Ben, start us off. What'd you think?
This was on my most anticipated list for 2024. I enjoyed the schlockiness and cheesiness of the original with Patrick Swayze. And this one didn't disappoint. I thought it upheld that legacy pretty well. Jake Gyllenhaal can obviously do the action well, and that's been proven here. And he still does it with, you know, there's a glibness to it, but also some darkness as well. Mm-hmm. The first 10 minutes or so, it's kind of dark, really.
Yeah.
And there's some parts, too, as he fights, you can tell that he's battling some demons. And, you know, it's entertaining. It is not very subtle. They pretty much outline what this movie is about. You know, he blows into town kind of as a hired gun to help this roadhouse. And along the way, he has a discussion with this, teenage girl who helps run a bookstore, and they're like, well, this is like one of those westerns, right? Where you got hired to clean up the town, and that's pretty much what it is.
And he says something like, it's not that kind of western or something, but it is.
Yeah. But, you know, Gyllenhaal's good. It's also held up by a pretty good supporting cast that includes Danielle Melchior, also of the Suicide Squad, mm-hmm. and you get, Colin McGregor as the big heavy, Billy Magnussen. I enjoy the kind of comedic, like, hood turns by both J.D. Pardo and Arturo Castro. Mm-hmm. But it was pretty enjoyable. I will say this, is that this movie was on Amazon Prime, and while I appreciated being able to watch it at, like, 8:30 from my bed on Saturday, I would have paid theater money to mm-hmm. see this, for sure. What about you, Keith?
I would, too. You know, it's the kind of movie that we don't get in theaters anymore, but that's okay. It was fun to stream. You know, when you first suggested to me there would be a Roadhouse remake, it kind of made me wince because the first one it's pretty unique. You know, it's not the most unique plot, but it's a thoroughly fun movie. Swayze's fantastic. But you're right, Jake Gyllenhaal doesn't really try to be Swayze. He is a little darker. He gives it almost a little more soul. But it's still, what really makes this work is that it's just as fun. And if they had dropped the fun, I would have had a big problem with it. I think there's one co-writer who on both of these are Lance Hill. So this guy is obviously obsessed with this story, and good for him. And it's Doug Liman. So, you know, Doug Liman is a workhorse, and I will say the fights are fantastic. The one thing I missed, there are a couple things, but, you know, I really liked having Jeff Healey in the first movie as the, not only the band leader, but a character. In this one, we get a rotation of house bands, and they're all very good. But I kind of missed that. But overall, you know, it captures the spirit of Roadhouse pretty perfectly, and I enjoyed it.
Go check it out for sure. It's not high art, but it doesn't aspire to be, and the first one didn't aspire to be either. It's just a movie to entertain you for 2 hours, and it did just that. And without spoiling it, who knows what the future is for this movie franchise, question mark?
I could see another Dalton movie. Because he's a good character. Yeah. I will say one thing I missed. It's good that I'm glad that McGregor was in this, and he just kind of bounces around, dances around. He's crazy. I will say what I missed, though, was Wade. Dalton really has no sidekick in this, you know, but the death of Wade in the first one, you know, spoiler alert.
Sam Elliott, his mentor.
One of the best things about the first movie. He gave it a real emotion. I will say, though, I did like that way Daniel Melchior plays the doctor, the love interest, has a little more edge to it. Kelly Lynch was fine. Really liked her character. And Jessica Harris is a big step up also. I don't know who played the Roadhouse owner in the first one, but I liked the fact that it was a black woman this time who was trying to keep her father's Roadhouse alive. And overall, the plot in this one had little touches that kept it in the family, but made it interesting on its own.
Watch the movie, mm-hmm. and I'm going to go ahead and give my review unless Keith has anything to say. But I'm going to give it. I'll steal Keith's phrase, though. I will give it a very affectionate 3 out of 5.
I don't know if I can say very affectionate, but I will go 3 also. It's just a perfect streamer. You know, a solid 2 hours, no more, no fat. Very good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Brad.
All right. Rotten Tomatoes, critics, and audience. Ben, why don't you go first this time? What you thinking?
I'll go 65 for the critics and audience. I'll aim high. I'll go like 87.
Mm-hmm. Keith?
I wouldn't go lower for the critics, but just for fun, I'll go higher. I think critics hated this. Although I will say, you know, Brad, I never look at Rotten Tomatoes, but I always go to IMDb so I can get the cast. The original Roadhouse was 6.7 out of 10. This one's 6.2 out of 10. So the people like it. I will go 70 on the critics and 80 on the fans. All
right. Critics 63%, 140 reviews. Audience 59%.
Wow. 1,000+ reviews. You got consensus.
What is the hate? I don't get it.
Well, give it a chance. I don't have audience.
Okay.
So that's the one you probably want. I do have critics though. So my guess is probably it's fans of the original are like, this ain't the original. So
screw them. It really is. It's all in the family.
You know, this whole legacy thing, we're gonna get into a little bit more with Ghostbusters, mm-hmm. but I thought this one, it's like it was respectful of the original movie. Without copying the original movie.
Exactly.
I ain't saying that's the reason, but if
the critics' consensus?
Well, the critics' consensus, courtesy of Rotten Tomatoes, Roadhouse updates a cult classic for a new generation, happily replicating the original's emphasis on cheesy brawn over narrative brains.
That's okay. Exactly right. It captures the spirit.
So. Yeah. Okay, so talk about remakes, legacy sequels, and whatnot. I guess we'll go to the third movie, right?
That's it.
It's time for the third movie.
Well, our last movie is Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, which I believe is the fifth Ghostbusters movie, along with all kinds of other Ghostbusters things. But Brad, what is this all about? All
right, summary as always, courtesy of IMDb. When the discovery of an ancient artifact unleashes an evil force, Ghostbusters new and old must join forces to protect their home and save the world from a second ice age.
Brad, you haven't spoke. You saw this movie. All three of us saw this movie. So why don't you go first, Brad?
You had to throw me out first. Of course,
Brad.
Well, yeah, it's your turn, man.
Yeah. All right, I'll just say this right off the bat. McKenna Grace is amazing as Phoebe Spangler. I just got to say this. I do have an underrated MVP. She's the MVP of this movie. As she was the MVP of the prior movie, Afterlife. She's definitely MVP of this movie. I love her charm that even like her scientific genius brain is throwing jokes or barbs that it varies in effectiveness. And she just nails it. It's dry humor. And she nails it perfectly. She grew up more in this movie and I really liked it. And I did like the will they, won't they romance with.
That was very sweet.
Yeah. Emily Allen Lynn's melody. So mm-hmm. that was the good. As far as the bad, well, I'll just say this. The first 30 minutes of this movie, I thoroughly enjoyed.
I'll go 15.
Okay, 15.
Let Brad take.
No, go ahead.
I enjoy the chase scene, the capturing of the ghost, and it reintroducing the scene and introducing the, reintroducing, I guess, the mayor, which I'm trying to find.
Walter Peck.
Yeah, Walter
William,
Peck.
William Atherton.
William Atherton, which, by the way, he's my underrated MVP.
He's always good.
So there's two that could go. I went with him. After that is when things, for my taste, tend to go a little haywire. The Ghostbusters is supposed to be sort of like a team movie. And then they split up the team. Literally, it was Paul Rudd's Mr. Groverson and Carrie Coon as Callie Spangler.
Yep.
I'll get it out. They played great off each other, and it was fun to see. But, the quick win banner works for them. But you've got McKenna Grace with Melody, which, and also being sidelined. We'll go into further why. I like that, but I wish there was more togetherness. And then you've got Finn Wolfhard, which, as Trevor.
He didn't get anything. No. He disappeared for like an hour.
He got legacied.
What's the name of that old green Slimer?
He got legacied with Slimer. I mean, he's not given anything. There's no character-driven story that doesn't involve nostalgia of an old... It's just, he's comic relief of the group, but...
But he's not even that funny.
Yes. I mean, there's a lot more I can go in, but I'm gonna defer some of my time to whoever wants to go next. So Keith, you go ahead and give your thoughts.
I was really excited going to this one because Afterlife is my single favorite of the Ghostbusters franchise. The first one, I'm not a big Ghostbusters fanatic. It's good. It's not great, but I like the nostalgia of the last one. This time they brought back the whole team again. But it's really just a pretty thoroughly boring mess. Brad, you're right. There was, at the beginning, there was a way back cold open where they find the artifact. Then there was a chase. Then there was more than an hour of just talking. And there was no action. It was so boring. And even then, even when they get to the big finish, even that was by the numbers. It really did nothing for me. So this was a pretty thorough disappointment for me.
I agree with all the points that you guys said, and I'm just going to use my time to talk a little bit more about legacy sequels, and Afterlife was kind of like Star Trek Generations or Star Wars The Force Awakens, where it was a nice kind of bridge that we thought from new characters that were going to carry the franchise with the Star Wars. And this movie was like straight fan service when... I love Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, Ernie Johnson. Oh, sorry, Ernie Hudson. Mm-hmm. I also love Ernie Johnson.
Yeah, exactly.
TNT.
Yeah,
Ernie Hudson, Andy Potts. But eventually, we gotta let them go, guys. Exactly. We can't keep trying them out. And in fact, it's like there's a wink to this movie when Dan Aykroyd and Ernie Hudson's characters are just like, "Why are we still doing this, man? We gotta enjoy our golden years. They can't be chasing ghosts all the time." And it's a big disservice for any momentum we had for the cast from Afterlife, really. I mean, you guys just mentioned Finn Wolfhard had nothing to do. They brought along the other characters who I liked, like Podcast and Celeste O'Connor's. Mm-hmm. I think her name is Lucky D'Amico.
I think so, yeah.
And Logan Campbell.
And yeah, she had a little bit to do, but Podcast had nothing.
But he had a hammer.
But like, just leave him out. They don't necessarily. Leave him in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Bring him back in the third one. Give more playing time to Finn Wolfhard. Let the Spangler, like, burgeoning ghost relationship, spoiler alert, you know, happen. And also this, you know, this thing, this subplot, too, about Paul Rudd's Gary, who's, you know, kind of the unofficial stepfather, like, trying to, like, actually be the stepfather instead of just a dude. That's really turning me off. Not even so much for this movie, but for all these legacy sequels that are happening now. We all saw the trailer for Beetlejuice 2.
That made me laugh, yeah, I have to say.
Yeah, and there's just like, you know, Happy Gilmore 2 has been announced. Like, I don't need those things if they're going to be crappy and you're going to sully the original one. So I don't need that. I will say positive things I liked about that, though. McKenna Grace, I did like it, like the flood nostalgia I didn't like, but... I did like the little tickler where, you know, they ran the commercials from the original original toys, and they had a just legit clip of Ray Parker Jr. and the Ghostbusters dancing for that theme. I will say that the Ghostbusters theme 40 years later, even though Huey Lewis might disagree, still good.
It's banging.
And also Elmer Bernstein's Ghostbusters piano theme, also good. But the rest of it, if it's going to be like this, guys, I'm out. I can't do this anymore.
Honestly, this felt like Star Wars The Force Awakens, the first Star Wars movie when it came back.
Afterlife is The Force Awakens.
That one at least tried, though, to do something, add to the story.
This one
didn't do anything at all.
That's my unpopular opinion, but it's just, they just kept throwing old characters out and out. And it took away from the story that they were trying to build the new characters. I mean, maybe that's just the new Star Wars franchise in general, because, I mean, look at Finn, what happened to Finn from Star Wars.
Named Finn. Finn from Star Wars.
Ben, what you said, that was basically my rant, so thank you. Just,
I know. I got possessed, like that ghost possessed me to rant.
I mean, the villain was a by-the-books ancient villain that had no impact on this. I mean, it's just...
And I'll let you go after this rant, but also, you can freeze the world, and it unfreezes in 30 seconds?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
I really wanted more from the villain. Bill Murray should have not been in this movie.
It's so sad.
he was brought back for two scenes where he threw trite one-liners that lacked humor. I mean, at least Dan Aykroyd...
At least he was drinking in the movie, which is probably what he's doing the whole time.
I mean, Dan Aykroyd, I mean...
He at least had some fun.
The Ray Stantz character, he did a wonderful job. I mean,
he was fine.
Just, he's still bringing the wanderment of the paranormal, and he's asking, like, existential questions about, like, how it would be
He actually wants to be there.
So, I mean, it was amazing seeing that, and I loved Ernie Hudson as Winston Zeddemore. I mean, he's like the... Mm-hmm. He's the Paranormal Research Department, which, by the way, though, they honestly came off as Keystone Cops, but that's another thing.
There's parts where I would agree with the mayor, Walter Peck. That needs to be shut down.
Or yeah, exactly.
We need OSHA or it needs some oversight.
And don't get me started on James Acaster, as I pronounce it, as Lars Pinfield, the glasses British guy.
We didn't need him. We didn't need Kumail Nanjiani. We didn't need any of those guys.
I'm going to stand up for Kumail Nanjiani, because to me he was not as good, but he was like the Rick Moranis character from the original.
I guess.
And then
it
fit the spirit of it, and he had some actual funny lines, unlike most of everyone else in this movie. I laughed at Kumail Nanjiani quite a bit.
I laughed at nothing. This Ghostbusters.
There's not nothing.
I laughed at nothing.
Brad just got progressively angry.
I know. He's starting.
Because literally, it's supposed to be what? It's supposed to be what? Horror humor or whatever? What's the category for this movie?
There's humor.
I guess it's humor.
Is there funny? No, there's nothing funny in this movie.
There's
hardly anything that I... Ben, did I chuckle at anything? Did I even chuckle at anything?
No. And, you know, the great example of that is, like, you both of you lost it in the Stay Puft Marshmallow scene. in Afterlife into Walmart.
Yeah.
And so they tried that scene out early, and like Brad was stone faced, and like
those little Stay Puft guys.
The mid credit scene was them stealing.
I didn't stick around for that.
Stealing a truck. And
I didn't need to see. Anymore.
I did the exact same thing I did in Madam Web and Web. I stood up and I was ready to go.
Yeah.
Because I did the same thing Madam Web. As soon as we saw it, we were out. Patton Oswalt, he's an amazing character.
Like I told you, I think they're setting him up for something more.
And that'd be great.
Yeah.
But he's only in one scene giving us backstory. Nanjiani, at least he tries. I'll give him that. But I mean, he's like a...
I liked him.
He's a Neo-like character who's basically a MacGuffin. And you could prove... Y'all can disagree with me on that one. My opinion, he's a MacGuffin.
No, don't disagree.
Retire Bill Murray.
Yeah.
give Dan Aykroyd a reduced role.
Give
Patton Oswalt his lines.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ernie Hudson and Annie Potts can stay because they're the money. They need to bankroll.
Even make Dan Aykroyd like a mentor or something.
If they got rid of the two of them, there'd be two less people to worry about. Well, Brad, since you are the most exercised here, use a ghost term, and you can lead us off.
Yeah, what's your rating?
I'm still going back and forth on those. I might change this end of year, but I'll go the higher of my two that I'm bouncing back on. I'm going to go 2 out of 5. The first 15, maybe 30 minutes, depending on it. The first couple scenes were good. McKenna Grace as Phoebe is amazing. Some of the supporting cast originals were okay. Everything else was a miss for me. Probably Madam Web in this movie will be in my bottom three at the end of the year.
So, there's a lot of time left, Brad.
There's a lot of time.
There's going to be a Venom movie.
Craven the Hunter.
Yeah. It might be.
By the way, a little geek sidebar. Did you all hear that Seth Rogen is going to write a Venom movie?
We'll see.
He did that Turtles movie. It's going to rock.
So, like I said, those three movies, it could be Craven, it could be Madam Web, could be this movie.
Okay.
I don't know. But yeah, so I gave it a 2 out of 5 begrudgingly. Y'all say lovingly. I'll say begrudgingly. I'll give it a 2 out of 5. So Keith,
I agree. I'll give it a 2, mostly for McKenna Grace, but this was otherwise an empty vessel.
I'm going to give it a 2.5 because the three of us aren't Ghostbuster fans. And I know even some of the Ghostbuster fans are mixed, but we know our theater, like Brad, the one that Brad and I saw it in, it was about 12 people, mm-hmm. and they laughed more than we did, and maybe we're just not the audience. I thought, like, Afterlife was a good kind of bridge movie. That would be like if you're a Ghostbusters fan and you have a kid, like, let me show you, let me teach you about Ghostbusters through Afterlife.
That one got it right. They did their homework, you know.
But I'll just say 2.5. It's mediocre. I don't think I'd watch it again, but I don't know if they're going to do a sequel. They probably will because movie companies only do sequels now and sequels and legacy things, but hopefully they get it right there. So two for Brad, 2 for Keith, 2.5 for me, and let's go into the Rotten Tomatoes. So, Brad.
All right, critics and audience. Ben?
Critics are probably towards us. I'm going to err on the lower end. I'm going to go 44. And audience, you know, there are people like Earl, and, you know, we're going to hear his segment after ours is done, who still enjoy this movie. So I'm going to go like 73 for the audience.
Keith?
I'll go a little higher with the critics, maybe 55 and like 70 for the fans. I think there's some people who really didn't like this.
Y'all need to go lower for the critics and higher for the audience.
Okay.
Critics, 43%.
I was close.
Yeah, you were close.
44.
Yeah, 210 reviews. Audience, 84%, 500-plus reviews.
That's the thing. If you love Ghostbusters, and that's maybe the problem that the divide that we have is that those folks, they probably like to see Dan Aykroyd and Annie Potts.
Even if I love the Ghostbusters, though, this is not a good movie.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's just probably as simple. We have critic brain.
Yeah.
People watching the movie theater, they probably have audience brains.
Cal Ripken has to retire sometime. Yeah. You know, Tom Brady has to retire. Wayne Gretzky, they eventually hang him up. And you can't just keep trotting him out there because it costs playing time for the other people. So.
Exactly.
Critics' consensus, courtesy of Rotten Tomatoes, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire offers a certain amount of nostalgia-fueled fun for fans of the original, but a crowded cast and surprisingly serious tone prevents this sequel from truly sparking.
I wouldn't say serious tone, but the rest of it's almost dead on.
You could say unfunny.
Yeah.
And as far as the weekend box office, in first place, not surprisingly, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Not an exact number, but they got $42 to $44 million.
That's a low number.
That's pretty good.
So that's I think it's a low number.
No, that's pretty good.
A lot of people are saying that's low, Ben, from what I read. So, okay. I mean, they probably spent a good, probably at least like $150 million on
at least.
Yeah. So, Dune Part Two reigns in at number two, $16 million this week, 4 week total of $230 million.
So it's not going to make it to a billion, but that's okay.
Yeah. So. Number three, Kung Fu Panda 4, $14.5 million this week, 3 week total of $131 million. Nice. So, number four, debuting Immaculate, $5 million in its first week.
Is that's the one with Sydney Sweeney?
That's the one with Sydney Sweeney.
Well, I told y'all, I hate nun humor, so I'm not in it.
Yeah, so.
Not horror, not humor.
Yeah. rounding out the top five, Arthur the King with $4.5 million, 2 week total of $14.3 million. And Keith, if you didn't mention it, I would have looked it up, but Late Night with the Devil finished in sixth with $2.83 million this week.
That's a big number. And like I said, there were probably 40 people at my screen.
And I think it was probably half the theaters that most of the big ones are in. I think it was
That's very good.
I think it was like almost 1,100.
People like David Desmalchian, and they like horror. So,
And horror is a good, that's a good money-making genre because you can make a horror movie for cheap and it can make money very quickly. I mean, I think that's what... Not A24, Blumhouse, right? That's kind
Blumhouse. And then, speaking of which, there's one coming out. I can't remember the name of the movie, but it's about a ballerina vampire.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be great. Yeah. I cannot wait.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to end this episode with my I won't say interview, but my talk with Earl about Ghostbusters. But I think this segment is wrapping up. So, Keith, why don't you do the plugs?
All right. You can reach us at moviesandameal.og@gmail.com, moviesandameal on Twitter, and give us a listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so for this part, I'm going to let these two gentlemen say goodbye, and then we're going to go on to Earl. So,
bye.
Peace.
All right, so we're back, and we're here with friend of the podcast, Earl. Earl, how's it going, man?
Going great, Ben. Thanks for having me on.
You know, we wanted to have you on because, at least for me personally, I think you might be the biggest Ghostbusters fan that I know. I know you love the franchise. You were on when we reviewed Ghostbuster Afterlife a couple years ago, and you were pretty pleased with how that turned out. So I'm curious to see what your thoughts are. But, you know, I found Frozen Empire a little lacking, a little disappointing, a little disjointed, but I'm not the super fan, so I know you're pretty excited about this movie. So, what are your thoughts? What, I guess, first of all, out of 5 stars, what would you give this movie?
I'd give it probably about a 3.5 out of 5. I mean, not bad, you know, but I'd say average. And I know there's a lot of talk about the first thought when everybody heard what the plot was going to be about. Okay, it's going to be an extended real Ghostbusters episode, which it felt that way, except there are going in, I don't want to feel like I'm gutting it before I give all my favorite things, but we'll talk about it. One of the big things is the villain, the big bad. He was talked about more than he was seen. And that works in some movies. Then, you know, if you're a Cloverfield fan, that worked. But, you know, you wanted something more, and it's great. They could have even started the movie off talking about the legend of Grock and working into modern day time. Then you go into that chase with the Ecto-1. But it wasn't bad. I mean, I can see, you know, looking at some of the reviews and some of the things that some people said, it did get very TV-centric, which, you know, barely gave much breathing room to some of the other characters. Finn Wolfhard, aside from being the sort of comedic part when it comes to dealing with Slimer, he didn't really get much time to shine. I'm glad that Ernie Hudson, after all those years, got the shine, because you even think about going back when the movie came out on VHS, it was Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, and Bill Murray. No Ernie Hudson to be in sight. And then him even talking about feeling not part of the team much and not on the active part of it because of the movie company, because of Columbia. And him to have a presence that grew more in Afterlife and into Frozen Empire, that was a great thing. I'll go on to what Brad would always talk about, you know, plot-based stupidity.
Yeah, plot-induced stupidity. Yeah, that's definitely coming up.
That's basically every Disney kids movie, if you look at it. But one of the big themes, I look this, there was family was the centric theme. Phoebe sort of feeling like it was, well, not a birthright, but she felt like it was something she had to do because it was in her blood. And then you look at Gary not feeling that he's fully family. And then you go with the fire master basically shirking his family responsibility and duties until later on. I mean, that's a big topic of that. I know it's weird when you see the people on the internet talking about how it has some type of agenda to it, which I don't think so. I will say it was interesting, the one part where Phoebe was at the chess table. I think she was one hoping Egon was coming back and she was still in the game, and you can see the little bit of disappointment. And even then, after seeing Melody introduced, you had a good feeling she was going to be essential to the plot in some way, and she did, and she was.
Now, I want to ask you, as a fan, you know, this movie, these two movies, this and Afterlife, are legacy, what we consider, I guess, now legacy sequels. Part of the reason I didn't give this movie as much as a high grade as I did the last one is I feel like the last one was really kind of charting a new course, new characters, maybe with the, just like, no pun intended, the, you know, the specter of the old Ghostbusters. And they came in at the end, and that was nice. And, you know, this one, I'll agree with you. I was happy to see Ernie Hudson and some Andy Potts in here. But, you know, maybe Dan Aykroyd got a little too much of a run there. And I just feel like I love those guys. The Ghostbusters, the first Ghostbusters movie came out 40 years ago and obviously has a longstanding legacy. It's kind of like Star Trek Generations. Eventually, you have to hand the reins off and you got to let those guys fade into the background quietly. And I think like that was why I felt the story suffered a little bit, because, you know, there was like four or five different plots running around. Disservice, you know, we got to give Dan Aykroyd some love. Podcast and the character that Celeste O'Connor played, the other like person that's not the Spangler person, like, you know, and the English dude, and even to some extent Kumail Nanjiani's Avatar Firebender character. I mean, that's basically what he was. We could have reallocated that time to focus a little bit more on, you know, the Spangler family plus you know, Paul Rudd's character, because you're right, like Finn Wolfhard. You know, it's like, I forgot he was in the movie. It was just like, he kind of disappeared. You know, he was kind of doing his own head-to-head thing with Slimer. And then, you know, lots of things went on. And then, like, he didn't really show up until, like, everyone was gathering at the end of the movie at the firehouse for the big showdown. I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot he's in this movie. But how do you think, as a fan, how do you juggle seeing your old favorites, but also like giving the new people some run so they can keep this movie, they can keep these things going?
It's interesting because the first two movies that made me think of this, where I still think it is where Frozen Empire is better. First thing that pops in my head, we've talked about this over and over off the air about numerous times. I'm already going to say Rise of Skywalker. Everything is better than Rise of Skywalker. And that that should be for another time. We just ran on Rise of Skywalker, but I still think it, and Jurassic World Dominion. Now that third one, new, that is awful. I think they balanced it better. And like I said, even the way they used Bill Murray, that was great. They didn't, you know, he wasn't in there the whole time. Knowing Bill Murray, he probably didn't want to be in there the whole time. Like I said, if Winston, who was the benefactor, and again, you showed the new Ghostbusting thing, and you introduced those characters, I feel like they went too McKenna Grace heavy. She's not the only Spangler in there, so that's the one thing. Finn Wolfhard having his storyline about feeling like he's responsible enough, mature enough. He's the 18-year-old. Need to get more things, not just to be able to drive the car.
I hope they just pare down the cast a little bit and give our core people a little bit more time to shine. I do want to talk about some of the good stuff and the nostalgia parts. And I don't claim to be as big a Ghostbusters fan as you, but I mean, I grew up in the time when the movies had come out and, you know, the real Ghostbusters. But did you get a kick out of like the beginning when they just literally just reran the commercials from the toys of the night of the 80s, and then the Ray Parker Jr. clip from the Ghostbusters thing? Like, how did that hit you?
That was pretty awesome. It was good to see that and have that nostalgic thing. And again, the funny thing is, we're in that age group where, hey, our childhood you know, we now have expendable money and expendable income right now. We're the people they're catering to. So that was pretty cool. I will say that one of the cool things I did notice, I know as much as the 2016 movies maligned, they used some of the technology from there, the hand gauntlets that Janine was using. That was, wasn't that what Kate McKinnon or Melissa McCarthy was using in that movie? You know, Slimer having the comic relief, I'm surprised it didn't turn him into, you know, to the real Ghostbusters mascot slash pet that he has become. Maybe it's also the best for a very, really one-note character that really doesn't talk at all.
I know your answer because you love the franchise. Well, you gave this movie a 3.5, so I know if there's a third one coming out, then you're going to be there, right?
Yeah, I'd be there. I'll just say this. Maybe somebody should get out of the movie business. They've been having dud after dud after dud after dud. And if it ain't Venom, and I know people are sort of mixed on Venom, but really outside of Venom, they really haven't had much success with a lot of stuff. You can start with more. You can start with Morbius going up to Madame Web, and this again, the Ghostbusters movies are probably the only other saving things outside of Venom that I have any interest in watching from Sony.
Well, I feel bad for Celeste O'Connor because she was in both. She was in this and Madame Web, so she's not started the year strong in 2024. Obviously, you like this movie better than Ghostbusters 2, correct? Or no?
No, I think they're equal footing.
Really?
Equal
okay.
Footing. Afterlife and original. And Ghostbusters 2, I liked it. I mean, the determining factor whether it'll be another Ghostbusters will be the box office number.
Sure.
If everybody comes out in droves regardless of what people think. And like I said, we know the critics didn't like it, but the fans so far, 86%, that's the people who are spending the money. That's all that's going to matter. And if they, you know, they double their budget, we'll see another one.
I'll close with two things real quick. What was your favorite scene in this movie? And then also, how would you rank these movies? But like first, what was your favorite scene in this movie?
I guess the scene where seeing that podcast is working with Ray to do the social media show and things like that. I think that was pretty funny.
When they smashed that old lady's watch.
Yeah, we gotta do it. Hey, we gotta do it for life.
So where does this rank then? How would you rank? I would say, and I'll buy you a little time to think about it. I would guess I guess the first one has to be number one, and then it's really gonna be up to your discretion. Again, buying you some more time. Like for me, I guess I would go Ghostbusters number one, maybe Afterlife 2. Frozen Empire 3, Answer the Call 4, Ghostbusters 2-5.
Wow.
This is close. Just my freestyling, so I don't know. What do you?
I was going to go Ghostbusters 1, then Afterlife 2, because especially the emotional part of the heartstrings and figuring out how they're going to do this movie without Egon. Then Ghostbusters 2, just because of the Bobby Brown.
Really? Thing. Okay. All right. Well, okay.
Then Frozen Empire 4th, and then 2016, just because that ending and the villain was so difficult. And you know, my whole discussion we had years ago about I couldn't think of a much better cast.
There's there's definitely a different. I don't know. 2016 was a different time.
Yeah, like I said, it wasn't that it was the female Ghostbusters. It was, I think they picked the wrong cast, and the people I picked, all of them are. Besides the people that I picked my four, actually, I remember three of the four. I don't remember who the fourth one was. I said Aisha Tyler. I said Aubrey Plaza. And I said Allison Brie. I can't think of the fourth one. But two of them have been on the career ascension as opposed to really everybody else who's sort of gone downward.
Yeah.
You know, everybody career-wise, everybody on that list has gone downward.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it wasn't a hit for them.
It's hard, but like I said, the next Ghostbusters movie has to either have more horror elements to it, maybe.
I think this next one, being the armchair screenwriter, you got to limit the legacy guys to one or two scenes. Like, you know, Dan Aykroyd on the whole side quest with Phoebe and podcast to like basically understand what the plot of the movie is. You know, you could have given that to Paul Rudd, right? Or somebody else, and
You know, I think it's just, it's time.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. If they do a movie that's more horror and they do sort of more mythology, the thing is, you want to bog it down with too much mythology. Maybe you get some of the people from like Lovecraft Country or things like that to help.
Yeah, freshen it up. Yeah.
I like I said, the mythology and things like that was great. I just felt like, had they started, I think that would have been a perfect way to start a Ghostbusters movie, even if you did it with Vigo for number two. Tell the story of this mythical character, why people need to know about it, and then you bring up, okay, this orb is where that creature is.
Yeah, yeah.
Figure out what it means.
Okay, Earl. Well, I think we'll just wrap this conversation up. So I don't know, man. That's good. It's good seeing you. It's good talking about Ghostbusters, even though this movie, you know, we seem to have some mixed reviews on it anyway. But even though I didn't like this movie, I just hope they get a chance to make a third one and hopefully find the right formula. I guess we'll just end it there. I know you're still kind of semi-retirement, but I don't know if there's anything else you want to plug.
As of right now, I have nothing.
Okay. It's okay to have nothing. It's okay.
I'm hopefully getting some more sports refuge. I might, maybe get back to it just sometime. Life happens and things.
Yeah.
And honestly, getting a little jaded by sports just because once you start adding the gambling into it, nothing is interesting anymore.
Yes.
That's the sort of thing. I mean, but hopefully eventually I'll come back, do some podcasts, whatever it is, and then you guys will be the first ones to know.
Whenever that happens, I mean, you're always the pod father for us and podcast emeritus. And you're also welcome back anytime. So we'll have to Ghostbusters, another movie, but we'll have you back on soon.